And here we go, going live. And going live, here we go. The system already. The joy of making things live. Here we go. Welcome to the Sutliffian Report. Today, we are supposed to be having Joe Kaufman join us. I'm really excited. And Mr. Facebook user, I can't tell who you are, but you're welcome to come join us on in the panel if you're interested. I can't communicate right now with Facebook, but come to the YouTube channel and I'll post the link if you're interested in joining us. So I'm just going to post it right now in the YouTube link. You just go to the Sutliffian Report channel, and I am posting the StreamYard link so you can join us live if you're interested. You don't have to come on and show your face, but we would appreciate if you just come hello and say hello. it's Joe Kaufman is supposed to be joining us today, and we're going to be talking about politicians and their links to what I call nefarious trouble, or another way to look at it is, you know, do you really like the concept of anti-Semitism or terrorism? Joe Kaufman is one of those incredible researchers who goes and gets the information. He does a lot of digging. Joe and I have known each other for, wow, it seems like 5 or 6 years now. I love his work. I recommend going to Front Page Magazine. He did another article today. So his work, and I'm going to get into that. We're just waiting for him to join us, hoping everything goes okay. I just sent him another reminder. But I do want to get into what this show is all about. This show is all about Christian news. So that means, as a Christian show, I always like to go to the Word of God first. And in my devotions that I'm sharing out each day, we're going through the book of Matthew. Matthew 26, verses 30 to 32. And when they had sung a hymn, they went out into the Mount of Olives. This is right after the Last Supper. Then said Jesus unto them, all you shall be offended because of me this night, for it is written, I will smite the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock shall be scattered abroad. But after I am risen again, I will go before you into Galilee. Jesus is quoting Zechariah 13:7. Awake, O sword, against my shepherd and against the man that is my fellow, saith the Lord of hosts. Smite the shepherd, and the sheep will be scattered, and I will turn my hand upon the little ones. Jesus personalizes this passage. Doing this makes him God. He is saying he has granted the sword permission to act. Up to this point, no attempt upon the life of Jesus has worked, whether with words or deeds. But this night, permission was granted to the sword. Let us not forget that there is a promise after the sword acts in Zechariah 13:7. If we go to verse 9 in Zechariah 13, it says, "And I will bring the third part through the fire, and will refine them as silver is refined, and will try them as gold is tried. They shall call on my name, and I will hear them. I will say, it is my people, and they shall say, the Lord is my God. Salvation is coming." The death of Christ is the death of an innocent, the death of the perfect man, the physical death of God's Son who took our place that he might pay the price for our sins. This sadness Jesus speaks of about the death of the shepherd. Well, it's interesting. He gives more than a pronouncement of his impending death. He reminds his disciples that he will rise again. Death, but with a resurrection. Mourning to be followed by joy. For Jesus, sometimes we race through the reading of your word and miss that you cared so much for your disciples that you wouldn't leave them without a message of joy following the mourning period. Mourning is blinding. It's all consuming of everything. Most of us who've gone through it know that. But joy, it doesn't leave us empty. It feeds us. It raises us up, and it brings us to a desire to praise you. Thank you for this love that you've given to us, Lord. Mold us and make us after your will, that we may become better at planting seeds so people would know you better. In your name, Lord Jesus, amen. Now, I get so I can see the picture more, and Joe still has yet to join us, so go off target a little bit, and we'll come back. All right, I'm just going to check my email real quick to see what's going on, because I did resend him a reminder. I don't know what's up, because usually he communicates a little bit more this week. I don't know. And he's I don't think he's ever been late. So let's see what's going on. He might be on Central Time. I'm not sure which might have that. He might be coming a little bit later if that's the case. He should know. He should be on. He might. I don't think he'd be on Eastern Time. But I want to talk about a whole bunch of things, but I want to leave the questions I have for Joe for later. I don't know how many of you are familiar with what's going on with COVID and some of the insanity with it, so I'll just pull that out while we're waiting. I am one of those who use public transit. And in New York State, there are laws that require if you use a bus, you must wear a mask. Okay. So last week I was on a bus, this past week I was on a bus, and the bus driver, this one driver, and we haven't had this in months. This one driver insisted everybody cover their nose with a mask. For months we've gone by and no driver has said anything like that. Oh, this was right after the raid on Trump's home. And the people were ticked and they started to scream, "We want Trump back." And you know, I'm like, wait a minute. Everybody gets off the bus before we hit suburbia. Almost everybody does. And you know, and it was predominantly everybody, I would say, on that bus was probably Democrat. And then it became, we're listening. You know, these guys have stupid policies. I mean, it's just all about control. And you know, I know that, but everybody there was saying it before I could. And I thought that was pretty cool. And this kind of, this new piece that I've just seen from Epic Times, I'm having a good laugh because I have been watching this. And it's nice to see Epic Times cover this. Epic Times wrote an article entitled "Vaccinated making up higher proportion of COVID-19 metrics in the United States. I have been watching that. We have seen it through. We have seen it through COVID. We have seen it through all the variants where you'd see people from hospitals that were 100% vaccinated getting 40 to 60% of their people going out because of COVID. Wait a minute. So how does a vaccination protect them? What is the purpose of a vaccination if it's not to protect you? And that's, you know, again, facts. I thought the facts here were interesting. So this article by Zachary Stiber and Melling Lee goes, vaccinated people are more likely than unvaccinated in recent months to be a COVID-19 case, hospitalization, or death in 25 states, according to Epoch Times investigation. And I keep checking back to make sure that I can see, because I can't have both screens in front of me, unfortunately. There we go. We'll put this on the other screen. So maybe I can see both, and we'll look for Joe when he stops in. All right. This is the interesting. The same month, say in Kentucky, in June, for example, 67% of the deaths were among the vaccinated, according to the data obtained by Epoch Times. The vaccinated made up 65% of COVID-19 cases, 64% of COVID-19 hospitalizations, 66% of COVID-19 deaths in Wisconsin. Think about that. The numbers are a drastic change from 2021. Why was that? Okay, now we have people who were forced to be vaccinated, and they're dying. Not just to COVID-19. That's going to be another issue. And I just received, I mean, I like to verify. I get stories, and sometimes I can't, because I haven't verified them, you know, I'll tell everybody I haven't had it verified, which this next story I'm going to, like I said, it hasn't been verified. They were making accusations that VAERS has been taking the deaths, the amount of deaths off of the CDC has been taking the death count down. You know, I've actually observed some of that over the time, but the number they were giving was extremely high. So some of this I know is true, but I don't know if the exact number that was given in the article I was given was wholly true. So I'm, like I say, I try to verify stuff. One of the reasons I stay with sources that I trust. Times. One of the things I love about it, they believe fully in the concept of trust but verify, all right? And that's before they put the news out. That's what it used to be normal, when you had real, real people who were communicating and doing the news. Many, you know, it seems like an age ago where we had a guy named Walter Cronkite who we could all trust, and then we couldn't trust him because he wasn't doing that very same thing, trusting and verifying. Yes, and I am hoping Joe will join us soon. He's just a little late. We're hoping he'll come in. I keep checking to see if he's in, and not seeing that. All right, so we'll hit another article here. This one is from the Middle East Forum. Why the Muslim Brotherhood is Still Dangerous? This is by Cynthia Farhat. An Arab news article from September 12, 2021, quoted Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi saying the Muslim Brotherhood has been eating away at the mind and body of Egypt for 90 years. Oh, yes, they have. It went on to state that Sisi blamed it for creating a culture of mistrust and warned other countries against a permissive environment which fosters militant Islamists. Okay, let's get straight. Let's be straight with this. These are militant followers of Islam. There's no such word as Islamist. That's created to create the belief structure that Islam has a middle ground someplace. And that's why I don't use those fake words. All right. Again, Joe should be here. I was going to have him last week, and somehow our communication is getting busted by Verizon. That could be the problem we're facing. Verizon, just in case you don't know, Verizon, if it owns Yahoo and it owns a few other places. And when you try to communicate and you're using Yahoo like I generally do, Verizon will read when you're communicating through it and stop people who use their sources, and will stop people who are conservatives from communicating. We saw that in Batavia last week when they decided to stop broadcasting for the reawakening. They prevented what I would call a national event, 5,000 people, 4,000 to 5,000 people present, from doing a live broadcast. And Eric Trump was there, General Flynn, and many others. And some, I got to meet Mike Lindell in person. That was pretty cool. few others. And I got to hand out the books and stuff that I do as well. That was cool. It's nice to be able to say that. Now, some of these things that we do, here we go. Just waiting. Joe has joined us. We're just waiting for the device to connect. So let me do a little bit more of an introduction of Joe Kaufman then. Joe Kaufman is one of these hardworking researchers. And I say hardworking researcher because he goes out and gets the facts. Now, what's cool about Joe Kaufman doing that is he's able to make predictions. And when you actually do connections and you do something we would call intelligence analysis, you discover facts that you don't always want to find. Some of these things you discover you don't want to discover. And I say that because none of us really wants to be saying things that are sad. And Joe Kaufman is one of those who do what they can to get the truth out. So thank you for joining us, Joe. We're glad to have you with us.
Thank you.
I asked you to come because of this one big article you put out, which I'm actually working with a group that I'm hoping to have you join eventually. I'll trying to get you into it because of the work that you do on this topic. Yeah, he did this incredible article titled "Candidate Appreciation Night Honors Anti-Gay Imam, Ex-Teacher of Al-Qaeda, Dirty Bomber" in Front Page Magazine, and it says a lot about the Islamic influence on American politics. And what I wanted to ask first is, what actually motivated you? What actually motivated you to start doing the research for this article?
It's what I do. I've done many articles about this individual from the Darul-Uloom Mosque, the Fight of Muhammad, for many years, and I saw that there was a candidate that was trying to attach himself very much to this imam, and for me that's deeply troubling when the imam is involved with what you had mentioned. So it was very important for me to tell everyone about it.
I'm going to get into that mosque because I think you're the guy who keeps writing about it, because I keep saying that, but I want to give him his question first. This guy Dale Holness, he lost in a 2021 primary by, this is what kills me, 5 votes. I've seen that, like, for local elections, it's not unusual to see something like that. And people, please understand that. It's not unusual to see 5 votes to determine an election. It's the United States. People vote. And that was just for a seat in the House of Representatives. Yet on July 30th of this year, so he lost that. But on July 30th of this year, his campaign sponsored a night of appreciation. I still think that is funny, that term. Featuring Shafayat Muhammad. So who is Shafayat Muhammad? I hope I'm saying that correctly. And why should every American be concerned about Dale Holness appearing with him?
Shafayat Muhammad. Interesting. The guy came out of the Deobandi movement, Darul-Uloom. Darul-Uloom is a big entity in South Asia, in Asia, and a lot of the Taliban have passed through the mosques over there, and on some leaders. So it's a big deal when that movement is transferred to the United States, and South Florida is not the only place that this movement has
Michigan has a big place. Yeah, Michigan's big on that too.
New York also has a big one. So it's spread in different places in the U.S. and this just happened to be one of them. And for whatever reason, a lot of Al-Qaeda in the time of 9/11 and after were attracted to this mosque and to the imam. In fact, like you mentioned, the dirty bomber Jose Padilla, he received a lot of his Islamic schooling. He was a convert to Islam before he wanted to set up a radiological bomb in the U.S. And he for whatever reason, wanted to take classes, Islamic classes, with this particular imam. But there were a number of others. The commander for Al-Qaeda, the now deceased commander, who was blown up by the Pakistanis in 2014, Ajmal Shukrijuma, who at some point was reported to have been the number two leader in Al-Qaeda. He was a prayer leader at this mosque. His father, who was the translator for the blind Sheikh Omar Abdel Rahman in New York for the trial of the 1993 bombing of the World Trade Center, I believe in 1995, his father was a teacher at this mosque. There were three others who had plotted to blow up power stations, the Miami power grid, and the National Guard Center, and a number of Jewish-owned businesses, all from Al Qaeda. The plotting of this took place at this mosque, and the imam himself has admitted that it was quite possible that one of the hijackers from 9/11 was praying at his mosque. So it was a serious haven for those related to Al Qaeda, and that's serious. And I know, you know, at the time of 9/11, the FBI had raided the place a number of times, and I guess had interviewed him. And since then, he's done a lot of interfaith events. You know, he's tried to, you know, make himself known, you know, in different religious circles. I'm talking about through Jewish religious circles and Christian religious circles as somebody that wants to do interfaith. But at the same time, when he was involved in different boards in Broward County, He was thrown off of them for the type of rhetoric he was spreading against homosexuals, including him saying wildly that the 2004 Indonesian tsunami was caused by gay sex.
Oh wow! Yeah.
So and others have gotten, you know, in trouble for saying similar things, but. He did, and he was thrown off a number of courts, and now for whatever reason, a politician wants to glom onto him. And I understand in this area, there's a sizable Muslim community. His mosque is one of the larger mosques in the community. So maybe politicians, you know, don't really care so much about the negativity surrounding or his mosque. Maybe they just want the votes, which I would assume is what's happening here. That's not a good thing, by the way. for the politicians who do that, but they do, and he was in local politics. He had served as a councilman for Broward County for a number of years, and then he was trying for a bigger office at the U.S. Congress. Serious, and for that he wanted to make inroads with this email.
It's a little scary when I think about it. You know, somebody going, it's bad enough we have people in Congress already who are kind of, who are really anti-Semitic, but to put, to put him in there after these kind of, it would just be so bad, is all I can say. It's kind of shocking. Let's talk a little bit more about the Darul Uloom Institute. And, you know, after I read this article, it was racking my brain. I know I'd read, you know, I'm got to believe it were your articles or a few others that talk about this particular place. Because every time, I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've seen this entity come up with and also mention Al-Qaeda. I mean, it's... but it says something to me that, I mean, this familiarity, and you know what got me, and it was the piece with Jose Padilla. All of a sudden I figured it out. I mean, here I am like, where did that come from? And I saw Jose Padilla, and I'm like, oh, okay, now I remember reading Jose Padilla. Okay. Please, one more time, tell us who Jose Padilla was and why his name should send up flares with those who remember 9/11. And I say with those who remember 9/11 because nowadays we have teenagers and some who are very young in their 20s who were born before that.
He was a local guy. He had originally come from, I believe, Chicago, and he moved in with his girlfriend in South Florida. He was working at a joint or 7-Eleven or what have you, and the manager of the place had spoken to him, I guess, a number of times about Islam. I don't know if Padilla himself was interested or if the manager was pushing it on him, but regardless of the fact they were speaking about it, and the manager got him his first Quran and I guess invited him to mosque and for whatever reason attracted to Islam. But he started attending different radical mosques throughout South Florida, and as I say, Darul Uloom was one of them, but it wasn't the only one. And he became radicalized. I think there was talk about him coming in contact with the others that I had mentioned, you know, connected to Al-Qaeda, such as Shukri Juma and the other ones who had plotted these attacks. And he made his way to Pakistan to train with Al-Qaeda. And at some point went to Egypt as well. And at some point between Pakistan and Egypt, he came into contact with Al-Qaeda and he started training with them. And he came back to the U.S. and he was involved in this plot to blow up a radiological bomb somewhere in the United States. That's where he got his nickname, Dirty Bomber. And I actually attended his courtroom trial, and I was there when he was convicted.
Did he ever openly admit to? I'm just curious now that you said that. Did he openly admit to this, or? I don't remember that part.
I don't remember whether he pled guilty or not. He may have pled not guilty. In fact, I think he did plead not guilty or something I don't think he pled guilty. I don't think he pled guilty. But I remember that he was convicted.
Yeah.
And he's still in prison, sure.
We don't think about the dangers of dirty bombs. It's something that's, when you start to look at it, that's the real fear today. You don't see people as scared about nukes, but when you hear about a dirty bomb, that's a nuke, people. It's far more dangerous, and it's far more likely than you're talking about a nuke during the Cold War. And this is a lot more scary, and people just need to be aware that this is the kind of stuff, affiliation with this particular mosque, and that should be enough to tell people to wake up. You mentioned Wholeness Campaign having placed a 2-page ad, now this caught me too, in the Darul Uloom's Institute's quarterly magazine, Al-Hikmat. Why should this particular advertisement raise concerns?
I mean, he was praising, I believe, in the advertisement, but the fact that he's advertising in there. He's showing pictures of himself with the imam, and essentially he's trying to get into it with the mosque. And again, while to him it may seem, like an innocuous thing to do, or maybe he's just going to ignore a little bit of what this mosque is about, or the things that Ivor or others have written about it. To me, it says something about him, about the fact that a politician wants to meet with him. There have been others. The sheriff of Broward County, past sheriff, Scott Israel.
Oh, I heard a lot.
Ironic is the name, but he was brought into that mosque, and there's others. I mean, like I say, the mosque is one of the larger ones, so maybe politicians want to go after those folks. But in doing so, they have to ignore a lot regarding the imam and a lot regarding the mosque itself. And there's something else about the imam. His mentor was, is it in that article?
I believe so, yes.
What was the last name?
Let me put the link in the chat room for everybody, so if you haven't seen it, and I'm just going to hit copy and paste, and come on, guys. Copy and paste this article in Front Page Magazine. I'm going to suggest everybody take this article and share it to every news source you can. I mean, to every social media you can. And I say that because, politicians who do these kind of things are espousing what is called hate speech. That to me is the outstanding scary thing. I look at this as fearful to think that there are people out there. I mean, this is where people get hired to do vetting when you're a politician. You hire someone to make sure you're affiliating with someone who's safe to affiliate with. Boards of trust your board of trustees for your local organizations. Their job is to make sure that the groups or entities you're affiliating with is that they can vet them and say, okay, yeah, we can have this relationship. A lot of times they don't do it. They're just there to say, yes, that's problematic. I looked at what he was, my biggest issue when I look at these things is how can you be in these running for office like this and think you can get away with it, like, oh my gosh, and do these things and not get called on the carpet for it.
I was mentioning was Ahmed Egot, and Egot is famous for being anti-Christian. he would go around the world giving speeches against Christianity. And he was also an anti-Semite and spoke against gays and all that. But the thing he's famous for, he wrote a book called Crucifixion or Crucifixion. And so that was the big thing that he was famous for. And he was a mentor to Shafi'i Muhammad. In fact, Shafi'i Muhammad has a picture depicting the article, a photograph on the Jerusalem website, taking hands with Egot in the center that's called, at the time it was referred to as the Bin Laden Center, because Osama Bin Laden and his family had given millions of dollars to Egot to create this center. And Egot was a friend of Osama bin Laden. His family, the families were very close with one another. And they have also mentioned the son, Shafi'i Muhammad, had traveled when Egot had died, after he died, Shafi'i Muhammad traveled to the old home of Egot and the center. And he met with the son of Egot, who is also infamous because he was at a Durban, they're from Durban, South Africa, and he went to this Durban conference, which is also infamous for its anti-Semitism, the Durban conference. And at the conference, the son, Egot's son, had held up a poster of Hitler, and it said something like, didn't finish the job or something.
I remember that. Yeah, that's it. That's come on. I mean, and this is the thing. This is the thing that kills me. You, David Horowitz had that famous interview with a member of a Muslim Student Association who was advertising that they were celebrating Hitler Week. And this is the kind of stuff that is happening on your local college campuses. People, it's shocking enough to hear, but it's something else entirely to see. And to think that I grew up, I graduated high school in 82. And when I think about the possibility of someone going out and saying, okay, we're going to celebrate Hitler. I'm like, you have to, I mean, what are you trying to do? Negate our history? Come on.
Right. It was a perfect example of how the Durban Conference was, Durban Conference became a haven for anti-Semites, and this was just a prime example of that when Egot's son, Egot, who was a famous Islamic lecturer, worldwide lecturer, and his son shows up with a poster of Hitler with some kind of crude message attached to it about murdering Jews. So, and that's the son of the individual that Shafi'i Muhammad traveled to meet with and to discuss the, good old times with father. So, that also says something about Imam himself. He could do all of these interfaith events.
I don't know if you see on the side, we have XYZ saying this is Tricky Dicky Durbin. Yeah. Yeah, and it's just scary. Anybody who would make these connections, I just, wow. I want to skip to ask a question. I probably let's see. I don't want to leave this one off. Are the North American Muslim Brotherhood affiliate organizations? Are there other North American Muslim Brotherhood affiliate organizations endorsing this man wholeness or? He lost the primary, so he's probably still not getting those endorsements, but were there others?
Yeah, there's a group it's an Islamist group that's fairly politically active, usually in Democrat circles, called Engage. It operates out of Florida, but it has different chapters around the U.S. And
that's one of the umbrella organizations. Yes. Yeah.
So there's an umbrella group. I don't know you're speaking of, but there's an umbrella group in South Florida called South Florida Muslim Federation, and Adam Gage is one of the groups within that, along with CARE and Islamic Relief and Islamic Circle in North America and a number of others connected to terrorism and bigotry and a whole lot of things. But the this group engage, they're specifically involved in politics. As I said, mostly within democratic circles. Thankfully, most Republicans won't have anything to do down that. I hope it stays that way, just because of the affiliations of this group. As I said, Muslim Brotherhood. It's Islamist group. It's a group that's part of this umbrella organization of all these groups associated with terrorism and bigotry and it has its own problems. But yeah, they endorsed homeless, which made sense if homeless is reaching out to Dual Room and others. But the election prior to that, I was writing a lot about one of the women that was running for it, named Barbara Sharif, who's Muslim herself, but doesn't mean she's affiliated with these groups. But she was making a huge push, much bigger than homeless, with these organizations. She was showing up at all of their mosques, and she was in photographs with all of the various leadership of these radical centers. And she was running for the same seat in the special election that homeless lost. She lost this as well. I'm happy that both of them lost. I don't really know too much about the person who won, but at least it looked like for the most part she was staying away from these groups. I don't remember ever seeing, I could be wrong, but I don't remember seeing her with any of these organizations. That's one thing I'm thankful for. I don't know if she's a big-time socialist or what. I don't know, but at least I know she's not hanging out with these organizations.
It's a little scary.
Sharif, when she was running last time in the special election, maybe because she's a Muslim herself and they wanted to make that a lot bigger, it would have been she was the first Muslim mayor of Broward County, I think, something like that, and homeless himself, as I mentioned, was a councilman or a commissioner in Broward for many years. But when Sharif ran and she was attaching herself to all of these organizations, she had lost. But once she lost and she was running for something else this time, thankfully she lost that too. state senate or something. But he, I guess, tried to get that community, to support him. And I guess he tried to get that. Once she left the picture, and he probably saw an opportunity to get a bunch of votes from the Muslim community. And unfortunately, he had to stand with radicals and embrace them in order to do so.
I caught the article I think you put out today on Rashida Tlaib. I had not heard of Rasha Mubarak, and I was a little surprised. And I've heard of all the squad that showed up to help her. I am praying that she loses her seat. Rashida Tlaib has all the anti-Semitic statements, her own personal ones and tweets and whatever, but... can you tell us a little bit about Rasha Mubarak as well?
Yeah, she's worse. She'd be picked as somebody that could be actually worse, although Tlaib is in office, so that makes her a power broker, but or someone that's in power. But Mubarak, she's worked for CARE and Islamic Relief. She was one of the leaders of CARE Orlando. She's the head of CARE Orlando. at some point. And she's been heavily involved with these organizations. And then she did something, I guess you'd call it smart from her. She started getting heavily involved with the Democratic Party, and she became a national committee woman for the Florida Party, for the young Democrats of Florida. She held a national position with them, and that afforded her the right to show up to different national events, and she. You know, she made some friends along the way. She made a lot of enemies as well. It seemed like some friends that she made who were in office, she wound up bashing them. I mean, look, the Palestinian issue for her is huge. That's who she is. And she always talks about how she was born on Nakba, you know, the catastrophe in Arab, you know, catastrophe for creating your own country. She got heavily involved in politics. She did burn a lot of bridges in politics, but one bridge that she didn't burn was with Rashida Tlaib. And that would make sense because the stuff that she was burning bridges with was this radical Palestinian stuff, you know? Cursing Israel in every way possible, and also the anti-Semitism came along with that as well, not just against Israel, but against Jews in general. And so she's found a friend in Tlaib because they're both like-minded, and so far, you know, Tlaib has not been punished for this, you know, for this relationship. She hasn't lost anything as a result of this relationship. Certainly her seat she's not going to lose because that community that she's within, it's a heavily Middle Eastern community, and they've already shown with a number of quotes from members of the community that they support her because of the Palestinian issue.
Wow.
And so they're gonna vote to lay in, and I don't think there's any chance of any Republican gaining that seat. So she has an easy time of keeping that seat, and she can keep her anti-Semite, as I mentioned, her right hand woman in her campaign. She claims that Rosh Mubarak has been a big part of her raising millions of dollars for her campaign. Mubarak has been in touch with donors she's played like a intermediary between donors and Tlaib. She's also been paid handsomely.
I was going to say, you said 200 grand. I was like, wow.
Spent over $200,000 from Tlaib. So Tlaib has no problem with it, and certainly Mubarak has no problem being embraced by someone. She's embraced by a lot of Democrats, but a lot of Democrats, like I say, they don't want to have anything to do with her as a result of all of this rhetoric that she pushes against Israel, against Jews. But she's found a friend in Tlaib, and that's a big friend. And Omar as well. Ilhan Omar.
Yes.
Ilhan Omar has visited Rosh Mubarak's home, met with the parents. So all good times for them, you know, but I want to expose her and in hopes that somebody in the Democratic Party is going to wake up and step in and at the very least speak out against it. There was an event with Rosh Mubarak that the Democratic Party canceled as a result of Rosh Mubarak being involved as a speaker in that event. And that didn't happen too long ago. So there have been instances where there's been a little bit of pushback But there's never been definitive statements made by the party saying, you know, we condemn such and such speech by this individual, or we condemn this individual, period, which is what should happen. I mean, really, she should be thrown out of the party, but unfortunately, people like her are, you know, they're popping up. A number of them are popping up. And as the party, you know, refuses to speak out, and it's going to be a domino effect, because more and more of them are going to be energized to get involved and to not worry about what they say publicly against Israel or the United States or anything.
That's one of the things I've never understood, is how a person in the setting of Congress can make public statements against one of our allies, because then they make themselves a domestic enemy of constitutional government, because that is a decision reached by our federal government. And when you're speaking, I mean, I get it if you're going to have a discussion, but I don't get it when you're expressing your an opinion in the government. I mean, if you're talking to someone else, you have that opinion. Your freedom of speech is there, but my issue is when you're making when you're using your position and you're making these hateful statements and using rhetoric against an ally, I have a problem. I'll openly admit I don't consider Turkey an ally of the United States. They're considered part of NATO, and for that reason only are they considered a somehow ally. But I think that's a big mistake on the part of NATO. But I can't see how a person who does that kind of an action with a title of congressman or senator or in any federal post, is what I'll say, can take a stand, as we're talking about, without being declared a domestic enemy of the United States.
That's her whole thing.
Yeah.
I seriously doubt that she cares so much about climate change, much about abortion or gay marriage or any of these, you know, or gun control or any of these big Democrat issues. But for her, time and time and again, she has spoken about, you know, this one issue. And yes, you know, she comes out with positions that are against mainstream American positions. And I would say that when somebody does that, comes out with those positions, you usually know where they stand on America itself.
Yes.
You know, you can pretty much tell that she's out there cursing Israel. Probably feels the same about the country that she's living in as well.
We just saw this last month in Canada, where they had a nice little walk in Toronto, and they were cussing out the Canadian government, calling them baby killers and telling everybody they had blood in their hands. And that's right across the lake from me, or a pond, so to speak. So, yeah, it's happening. It's not just here in America. It's a sad, sad thing. Joe, tell everyone how they can support your work. And I mean, you do a lot of good work, and I want to encourage you to keep going and doing this. Always feel free to send me your work, because I always end up posting it on LinkedIn. And I get a lot of interesting responses.
I appreciate it. So the website is kaufmansecurity.org. That's K-A-U-F-M-A-N. And you can see to the spelling on my name, and that's called the Joe Kaufman Security Initiative. You can certainly donate through the website. I greatly appreciate it if anybody does that. But there's no chance of me stopping this work. I've been doing it for so long. It's just become my life, you know. So play softball and tennis once in a while, but this is my life, and this is what I do, and I'm proud of it, and I'll always be proud of it. Hopefully not soon.
May God continue to bless you, and may you just continue to put out, these are important articles that every American needs to see. And I'm going to say Canadian, because I'm going to pick on Canada, because they need to wake up and see what's happening there as well. Thank you again, Joe.
If I were there,
you know, you would probably be, it would be worse than that. You would be facing the Human Rights Tribunal there. And then anything you wrote would be disappeared. And you might be put in jail as Islamophobic. We had Eric Brazeau on our show recently, and he spent about a year in jail for Islamophobia. So we're going to have him back on. Watch for, he has a new book coming out on, and I want you to watch for that. This one's on, I'm still kind of fascinated. He's talking about the difference between what Islam teaches and what reformers like Zuhdi Jasser and I think that's important, because he talks, and this is one of the things I have to credit him, because he keeps telling me we have to look at what they're teaching. It's not just what people tell us is that the, you know, what they believe. It's what are they actually teaching in the mosques? And I think that is all important. And I think that is extremely important. I mean, do we actually, you can go to your local church and they'll hand you a program. They'll tell you what they're teaching that day. You can find out that week. They'll even give you a recording. But that's not always true for mosques.
Well, when you go to church, pretty much know that the material that you're getting is based in the Bible.
Yes.
Written by modern day people, the writings are based on things in the Bible. I can't speak for all Christians. I'm not Christian myself, Jewish, but I would say that they're not talking about violence. They're not talking about hatred of others. But with regards to the mosques and regarding the mosques and these materials, many of which I've written about, it's anything but that. It's materials filled with violence and bigotry against others. Yeah. Specifically Christians and Jews and Hindus and women and gays and other Muslims and other Muslims. It's criticisms about everyone, but many times in very violent forms.
Yes, that's one of the things we're going to be getting into later. Thank you, Joe. We'll have to have you back soon. Keep up the good work. God bless. Wow. I'm always excited to have Joe back on the show, because his work, I never cease to be amazed and impressed with his work. Now, if you're not familiar with Joe Kaufman's work, you can find it quite often on Front Page Magazine. I don't think he can post all of his, I mean, he puts out quite a lot. And Front Page Magazine is one of those places that posts a lot of his work. It gets shared a lot of times by Jihad Watch, or you could say robertspencer.org today. You will find an outstanding amount of material that he's researched and put out. XYZ. Remember Eric Brazeau was on the show recently, and he shared his interaction with a police officer of Toronto. And It was rather shocking. And I say that it was shocking, and the reason is this. The article, the video, let me see if I could actually, I didn't get that ready. So, but this article is, I should say this video, I say it's shocking because of the stuff the officer says and the stuff the officer does. What am I concerned about here? When you are a law enforcement officer and you feel your job is not to protect the citizens, but to protect, this is where it gets scary. If you think your job is to protect people who aren't citizens, that's where I get concerned. I mean, where is the freedom for the citizens? Like I say, I get concerned. Something's wrong. So I'm going to pull up this and give you guys a clue as to this. Let me just pull this over to the side. This is just, I'll put the link in the chat room. Everything's there. This was shocking to me to think that this could actually happen. I'm just going to share this on in the YouTube. I can't say any kind words about this interaction. When I put this up on LinkedIn, people connected the officer's LinkedIn profile to which I didn't expect. I mean, I'm not calling him out, but the video shows his name. He's a Toronto police officer. And you can listen to what's being said in the background. This should shock you. All right, let me pull this up. This again, this should blow your mind. Now, Eric Brazeau was just standing there. He wasn't saying anything, and he was videotaping. They isolated him to keep him from communicating. And now, what was he doing? Communicating. He was just standing there videoing it. So the officers stopped him. This is a problem. So let me make sure that this... Okay, here we go.
Over here. Please don't go over there again. That's the sidewalk. And I was saying, I'm not pointing at you. Okay, that's the way I talk, officer. No, I can talk like that too. I do that because I was saying respectfully.
Sure.
I'm speaking to you respectfully.
It's called tolerance. That's right.
I'm an
acceptable
person. So I was standing on the sidewalk, right?
Yeah, listen to you long enough. I know what you're doing. Tell me, what am I doing?
I wasn't born yesterday.
What am I doing, officer?
I'm calling conflict. Whether you agree with them or not, that's not the
I was in shock the first time I shared this, and I saw it, and I had to share it. To think that your citizenship means nothing. That's what that Canadian police officer stated. I have a problem with that. To state that your citizenship in your country means nothing. I don't know about anybody else, but I have an issue with that whole statement. It says something about where that officer's heart is, what he views law enforcement as. So he will not defend. Yes?
That just reminds me of the Nazi Germany.
In the
happening all over again.
Did you hear what they were? I didn't play what they were screaming and yelling on. I don't know if you heard it in the background, but they were calling the Canadian government baby killers. If you actually listen to this, I'm going to put that link in the chat room before I forget. Let me just find my mouse. This is something I think everyone should share. Please share it out. I say this because I think it's extremely important. If you're on YouTube, please, or if you're on Facebook, come see this on, share this out. Canadian law enforcement is saying your citizenship means nothing. They won't defend you as a citizen of the government. They'll isolate you because those who are not citizens or who are inciting riots, they're more important. Those who cause violence are more important. Now, I mean, I get some of what the officer's doing. As an educator, sometimes I would send out of the room a person who wasn't the problem. And I would say to them, this is the thing that, and this is, I would send them out of the room and I'd say, look, you're not in trouble. I'm just asking you to leave because I'm hoping that can solve the problem. And this is, you know, you'll get an A for the day. I'd do something like that. Because I know I couldn't get the other person out of the room without holy hell breaking loose. And nothing holy about hell, but it was just, it was bad. Had that happen more than once. In this case, we have law enforcement there. They isolate a guy who's not causing any problems. They have someone who is inciting violence, making loud speeches, and they don't arrest that person. I thought inciting violence was a crime. Because in the video that is prior to this one, they actually call out Eric. And they tell people who he is and that he should be isolated and targeted. And they do it in a roundabout way. They don't explain what that means. But to me, that person should have been arrested, that person behind the microphone. But that's okay. This is where I'm really, really concerned. My next article is actually from Canada, too. And let me talk about this one. You know, keep this in mind. This came out today on Jihad Watch. It's titled Canada. Diversity Minister was warned about consultants' anti-Semitic tweets before the news broke. Now, I have been watching some stuff on this kind of thing happening repeatedly in Canada. So let me just read this. It's written by another wonderful Canadian named Christine Douglas Williams. And again, it came out today. Robert Spencer stated in his update on this story on August 23rd, Laif Marouf has been seething with open hatred for Jews and others for years. If the Trudeau government only just found this out, it's criminally negligent. If it knew all along and didn't care until there was a public furor, it's something worse than that. As it turns out, it was something worse than that. Liberal Member of Parliament Anthony Housefather stated that he contacted Diversity Minister Ahmed Hussein before the news was widely reported in the media. He also aggressively demanded that action be taken. But none was. So now the Liberal government of Canada is in damage control mode. Actions speak louder than words. The major public fallout from the Marouf revelation is what moved the Trudeau government to act. Not Marouf's appalling display of anti-Semitism in the first place. It's that they're covering because they knew about it. They don't want anybody to know that they willingly hired an anti-Semite. That's what it's about. There's more background about the anti-Semitism in the Trudeau government, especially their diversity circles. I mean, how can you be diverse while being anti-Semitic? Please explain that one to me. That's what the Trudeau government does. When you look at Trudeau, when he was visiting India and who he met with, who were anti-Semites, people affiliated with terrorism, yeah. It says a lot about who that man is. We've known this, unfortunately, for years. It's just like they have their own idiot. We had an idiot. Now we have a guy whose lack of ability and mental acuity is too outstanding. It's embarrassing. I say embarrassing. This is a man who has really no mental acuity. He has what we call dementia. And again, if anybody has relatives who have dementia, you'll know. You'll have seen this. You'll be frustrated because you've seen it and you can't deny it. And you want to. So I'm going to share this next piece, and I'm using Translate Google to share this. So let me pull this one up. This should surprise you. This is out of Germany, and when I saw this, I was like, something's wrong. Okay, and I don't know if everybody can read this, but it says it's by Wolfgang of Windsteiger. Sturzenberger on the ground, dangerous recon work, reconnaissance work, Gladbach and RW, and this is August 20th. Islam enlightener Michael Sturzenberger falls to the ground in Gladbach. An object hit him in the head. The result failed from a failed rally of the Pax Europe movement is to be made up for. The lynch mob visibly in the video shows the conditions in the NRW cities, whose youthful potential for aggression is predominantly migrant and Muslim today. How is it in Gladbach with its set? Listen to this. I mean, this is the statistics are messed up. That's one of the points of this little article. I say little because it's that the video below is something, but it says 75,000 inhabitants. In 2016, they reported 11,425 foreigners. In 2019, this is where it gets important. They report 8,640 migrants. Are you catching the difference in terminology? So instead of being, instead of the percentage going up of foreigners, because they're using a different terminology, all of a sudden the percentage is going down. And they're not talking about second generation or anything. But let me show you how bad it was. I'm not going to play the sound, but I will play the video. Come on. Come on. Oh, come on. I just played this. And I guess I won't. It was bad. They're protecting a guy, and let's see if I can. I'll have to go back and play it later. Figure out how to get that in. It's just shocking to think that the police, they were all there. There were about 15 guys there, and somebody shot something with a rock or whatever, and hit Michael in the head while he's surrounded by cops. He's not doing anything to incite them. It's the fact he's there. That's the stuff that has to get you concerned. What happens when you tell the truth? In this case, it's dangerous. I'm hoping to actually travel and start doing this, start telling people the truth. I want to talk about the dangers that are in our textbooks that our lies that will allow our children to be deceived. And I want to go around the world, and I would say around America, and do this. I want to talk to educators in particular about this. Anybody who is willing to have me, I'll try and come. I have a chance of going to Pennsylvania in a few months and possibly doing something like this. It's a small chance, but it's worth the chance for me. I'm willing to take it. The idea is if you get to share the truth, you should run. You should run and go. And, you know, one of the things Joe talked about that I want to get into also today, and it's every single week, the ones who suffer most from Islam are Muslims. The ones who get killed the most from Islam, it's not Christians and Jews. It's Muslims. What am I talking about? Islam even treats the followers of Islam, if they don't believe perfectly or enough, they're willing to kill even their own followers, because there is something in Islam that requires you to be next to perfect. I'm not saying you have to be a perfect believer, but if someone can say you're not Islamic enough, that makes you a target. So if you're a Shiite and you're next to a Sunni, and a Sunni thinks, okay, you're not Islamic enough, they can, and this is allowed under Islam. It's not something, you don't see this in Christianity. You don't see this in Buddhism. You don't see it in Shintoism. You don't see that in any other faith structure that I can think of on the planet. It's only in Islam. They're willing to kill to this extent. It should shock people. Now, this is out of Afghanistan. Death toll in Kabul mosque. Blast raises to 21. And I know I talked about this, and I keep talking about this particular event. It says a blast that ripped through the mosque, packed with worshipers in the Afghan capital, killed at least 21 people and wounded more than two dozen others, police said Thursday. The number of bombings across Afghanistan has declined since the Taliban returned to power last year. But several attacks, some targeting minority communities, have rocked the country in recent months, including those claimed by the jihadis, the Islamic State group. No group has claimed responsibility for Wednesday evening's blast at the Kabul Sedkoy Mosque, which has an adjoining madrasa. He was my cousin, may God forgive him, said one local resident, who gave his name as Masiula, referring to a relative who died in the explosion. 1 year had passed from his marriage. He was 27 years old. He was a good person. And again, in Christianity, we don't say being a good person gets you to heaven. There's nothing good you can do. The only good comes from what Jesus did for us. Kabul police person Khalid Zadran said 21 people had been killed and 33 others had been wounded at that point. Italian non-government organization Emergency, which operates a hospital in Kabul, said they received 35 patients, including three who died. Now, this is when things started on Wednesday. And now they're up to, what did we say, 21 dead? And that's just this week, people. I would like it if that was not true. But it is. That's one of the horrible facts about Islam. We also have an attack. Let's talk about Biden. Now, I just talked to you about Afghanistan, and that's a human rights abuse. A human rights abuse. When you have people killing each other over belief structures. That's human rights abuses. So they're out there murdering each other just to make each other, it has to do with, are they strong enough in their faith to be the Muslim they want, that particular group wants you to be? That should be scary in the long run. Let's look at this one. This, again, is from robertspencer.org. And this is when he talks about politicians, that's where, you know, political issues. How about this one? U.S. commits $7 billion more to the Taliban despite severe human rights abuses. This is again by Christine Douglas Williams, and it came out today. It isn't enough that Joe Biden left behind $7 million worth of sophisticated military equipment that the Taliban quickly seized. It wasn't enough either that he left Americans to die violent deaths in Afghanistan. Now the Biden administration is discussing giving them, the Taliban, $7 billion more. Biden claims that any money donated to Afghanistan for relief will be kept out of the Taliban's hands or used by the Taliban in a humanitarian fashion. Really? Do you think that's actually possible that they could determine how, when a government, when they receive funds, how they would use those funds? It's the reason why we're not supposed to be giving money to groups like Hamas. Oh, because guess what? That money does whatever they don't use. And if we gave them $10 million and they had to pay $30 million out or $5 million out to the people who are committing these crimes, they do pay the people who commit crimes and kill Jews. They do pay them. They pay them while they're in jail. They pay their family. They pay the ones who die. If the United States pays X amount of dollars, that's less that much money that they would spend from their government to pay those things of paying for martyrs and paying for people who attack Jews. It's that much less that they spend from their own budget. Think about it that way. And Joe Biden's okay with killing Muslims. He's okay with Muslims killing American citizens because he left them there. But he wants to give them $7 billion more. If this isn't evidence of dementia, I don't know what it is. And it celebrates the windfall. The Taliban mocked America. Last year, Taliban members dressed up as U.S. troops, the New York Post reported. After humiliating swift takeover of Afghanistan amid President Biden's botched troop withdrawal. Again, it was a planned troop withdrawal, people. It was planned. Go back. I talked about this in August and September. It was entirely planned. It wasn't botched. For those of you who can't see the planning of this, again, it was a planned appearance of a botched withdrawal. No, they had to remove things that Trump had put in place that would make the citizens get out first. It was all planned. They had to remove the programs that Trump put in before that they could do this. Again, their whole purpose was to bring over the last figures I heard were about 120,000 followers of Islam to the United States. That was their goal. They achieved it. And now he wants to give them $7 billion more. They don't allow children. They don't allow women. Here's the big women. For those of you who are great fighters for women's rights, the Taliban has decided no girls, we're talking about sixth grade and up, need any more education. If that's not a human rights abuse, what is? That's okay. Joe Biden wants to send more. He wants to send more cash. This should be upsetting. It should be. All right. And let me put in this next one. This one is out of Maldives. Now, we've seen two attacks. This one, Maldives Minister Ali Salai. I'm hoping I say that correctly. I'm not going to promise I pronounce things correctly because I definitely know I don't sometimes. How about this one? I am not locked and loaded, Protestant, but I hope everybody else is. I am so far, you know, I just say God has taken care of me. So I consider myself blessed at this point. I've seen enough to say, you know, my children are like, Dad, you got to start carrying a gun with you. And too many places I go, I can't. So that's where I'm at, unfortunately. Let me share this next piece here with you, too. I love Op India because they will say more than I generally will. I'm going to recommend this, and I'll put the link in the chat room in just a minute. So this one is, again, Maldives Minister Ali Salih stabbed in broad daylight, attacker seen reciting Quran verses. What does it say when a guy quotes the Quran and then races to stab or kill someone? It should say a lot. In a horrific incident, Maldivian minister Ali Soli was attacked by a sharp weapon while he was riding on a bike in the Hulhumit region of the capital Mali. The Maldivian police immediately arrested the attacker who tried to slit his throat. According to reports, the incident is said to have happened on Monday when the minister was riding his two-wheeler bicycle in the region of Mali. The attacker stopped in front of his bike, blocked his way. He then chanted some Quran verses and launched an attack to cut the man, to cut the politician's neck, as reported by the Maldives media. And here we go. Let me share this. All right. And I'm going to cut it there before he does the action. Oh, that's my fault. Let me try one more time. The joy of not hitting that one button. And we'll try it again. There's a button on our share screen that says share sound.
The volume's off.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Here we go. Got myself back on. Here we go. Yeah, it's think about someone attacking you after they start quoting the Quran. Can it happen? The more we, again, this is, they're quoting the Quran before they do these things. Can it happen? Can it happen here? I'm a firm believer that most Muslims have no clue what's in the Quran. I'm a firm believer that if they did, we would be in trouble. And if they continued to believe, I think most Muslims will leave Islam if they simply read the Quran or the Hadith or both or the Sirahs. In the United States, Muslims have no reason for not reading those things. I would love for them to read them. I think it's important that every red-blooded American read these things to find out what they really believe versus what someone tells you they believe. Don't trust what I say. Don't trust what anyone says. Go find out for yourself. I do recommend only one Quran, and that is this book, The Generous Quran by Usama Dakdak. All right, go buy that book. That will change and it'll open your eyes, and you'll see that this book, I'd say it's accurate. It will tell you that there's no such thing as a clear Quran. There is nothing clear about it. Thank you, Darcy. There's another book I recommend, and I don't know how well it's going to show because I have a green screen. But Reliance of the Traveler, I do recommend. Pick that up. Have your eyes. Do not read this book or put this book around children. And I'll say that also about the Quran. Don't leave these things out around children. Reliance of the Traveler. There are some. You don't want a child to read these things. It's Islamic law, and it has discussions on pedophilia. It has discussions on murder. It has discussion, and you don't want children to read these things. I say discussions. It has the legal rulings on if it's allowed or not. And even before you get to that discussion, that topic, it's in there. It's in the very first third of the book. And believe me, when I was reading it, I mean, again, I don't want children to read this because I don't think that's a great topic for children. I think when you get to a certain age, yes, your 9th, 10th, and whatever, yes, I think that's a great age for kids to see this. But I think there are ages where we need to protect our children from hearing these type of topics. And that's where I'm saying, you know, you're a certain age. I agree with you, Protestant believer. Parents need to teach them all of it. I think there's a proper age for that. I agree with you. I just don't think kids 5, 6, 7. Right now, we're fighting in this country to keep the perverted, and I'm going to call them out, Democratic Party from forcing our children to accept. I'm particularly saying the Democratic Party because these groups do not affiliate with the Republican Party or the Independent Party or the Libertarian Party or anything outside of, okay, there's one other group that will affiliate, the Democratic Socialist Party. Those are the only two parties that I have seen that they will affiliate with. Usually it's both. They want to educate your child that your child can change his or her sex, and that his and her are not pronouns that should be exclusive to a male and female. Or your child can choose to be a female and have things cut off if he's a male, or have surgeries. In some states, which I'm hoping there would be all 50 doing this, they're starting to look at this as a form of child abuse. If it was 1980, if it was 1990, if it was early 2000s, all of these actions that we're seeing today, it would be considered child abuse. It was defined as child abuse that they're trying to do this to children, to teach this at a certain age. Sorry, it is child abuse. I don't have a problem saying it. If you can show me in the law where it's okay for somebody to talk to children about this topic without their parents present. I'm talking about kindergartners, first graders, second graders, third graders, fourth graders, about this kind of topic and say it's legal. I challenge anyone to find something in their state law that says it's legal, because it's not. It is not. Libland, California, no, still not legal. Libland, New York State, no, not legal. How do I know that? That's where I worked as an educator for 20 some odd years, and I'm telling you, it's not legal. Doesn't matter what, you know, the people are trying to say and proclaim is legal, they're doing it and getting away with it by a roundabout way, by putting it in curriculum. And I won't even deign to read some of the things they're saying because they're so shocking. Yeah. In India this week, they caught a couple imams out there. Guess what they were doing? Recruiting for Al-Qaeda. In the United States, if they caught they caught leaders of mosques recruiting for Al-Qaeda, would we actually hear about it? I don't believe so right now. In Canada, would they tell anybody? No, they probably let them continue because they're not offending Trudeau. Oh, they're not offending. In the United States, if you're not offending Biden or a Democrat, I mean, look, if you look at the unequal thing with this attack on President Trump's Mar-a-Lago house, and I say it's an attack, a raid, when we have President Obama, who has, I believe it was 33 million secret, top secret, and probably compartmentalized as well, documents within his house, in his private collection of documents, 33 million versus, what did we say, 18 boxes or 13 boxes of, which is supposed to be declassed. Again, there's a document out there. It was written January, I believe, 19th, about the declassification of these documents. It was published by the White House January, one of the last days Trump was in office, about the required declassification of those documents. What did get taken? Declassified documents, or documents that were required to be declassified by a sitting president. Now, it's interesting to say he didn't take those. He didn't have class. It doesn't matter if he had classified documents. There's court cases that have gone through, and one of the court cases I think it was a FOIA case that went, and it was Judicial Watch that actually tried to obtain documents that Bill Clinton had. Documents. They were audio recordings that he had kept in his sock drawer. And the National Archives said that they can't get those things because they're the property of the president. Whether they were secret, top secret, whatever, it didn't matter. They were considered his private documents. So if that's the case with Bill Clinton, I mean, again, there's a lot of documents out there that prove that this is not only a fishing expedition, it is against federal law what actually happened. So I get concerned with this whole thing, and I consider, and as American Christians, I believe the goal here is to get Christians and conservatives upset to the point where they're, picking up their guns and fighting. They don't understand Christians. They don't understand conservatives. Christians and conservatives, our goal in life is to share the love of Christ. That's what it comes down to. Our goal isn't to go out and say, you've wronged me. You need to stand up. We'll knock you down. No, our goal is to share the love of Christ. We meet these people out there that want to abuse our children. It's okay for us to stand up. It's okay for us to hold, to protect our children. It's okay for us to keep children home so they don't go to schools and get messed up with this stupid stuff they're teaching now. That's protecting our children. It's okay for us to cling to the Constitution, which gives us the right to defend our family with the use of firearms, if necessary. Those are things that are allowed in this country. Thank God. I look at what's happening in Europe. They can't defend themselves. To trust the police to defend yourself, and the police don't defend their children. And I pick on the UK a lot because of this, and that's because my heritage originally comes from England. And it bothers me to think that some relative of mine wouldn't think there was great importance in protecting their children. It really bothers me. That's where my heritage is. So that's why I get upset with it. There is so much out there, people, about what is right and wrong and our job to protect. I've been listening to my pastor. I've been listening to so many different news sources out there. And I think that's one of the things we have to do. Today, what I would love for people to do, number one, find out what is your school district using as a textbook. Ask for a copy of your world history textbook in your school district. And then simply copy off all the pages on religion and send them to me. I'll look at it. I'll even write a review for you. I'm willing to put myself out there and do this, because you need to be aware of the misinformation that is out there. You have to be able to tell your kids why these are lies. I'm not telling you all to, you have to read these lies and you have to be able to detect them all. Find people who can do it for you. There's wisdom in that. Because not everybody's, you can't be an expert in everything. Data, it's just impossible. You have to have people you can trust. And if I'm one of those for you, great. I'm willing to do that work. I am just mind blown with the stuff that they're doing with textbooks. This started in the colleges in the 60s. Those professors got in. These are members of the Muslim Brotherhood. They got to the point where they created influence. Then they got to the point where they're changing what textbooks say. Now, I don't know if anybody knows this, but all of a sudden now they're saying the Chinese didn't create calligraphy. The followers of Islam did. That's what they're teaching now. As an educator, we went, 1 year we were teaching, it was required teaching, that the Chinese created calligraphy. And, you know, from there, the next year, all of a sudden we were required to teach, again, hear the word required. All of a sudden we were required to teach that Islam, the followers of Islam, created calligraphy. We're talking centuries, thousands of years difference. One came before the other. How does that? Yeah, and that's the stuff that is being put out there. Misinformation. I'm just concerned that people don't understand this and aren't seeing it. And I don't expect everybody to see everything. There's a lot of facts out there. We have to start doing what we can. The big thing I tell people today. You want to fight this, here's one way to fight. You want to stop the transgender movement, all of this? And, you know, probably a lot of women would be upset with me for this one. You want to fight, do everything you can to boycott Disney. If you can shut up Disney, if we can make them bankrupt, them know that they have offended not just Christians, but all of America.
Yeah, they're actually attacking the children.
Yes.
Well, Disney's for children. They're making all these movies that are homosexual. You know, that's not right. Not for the kids.
I've dated some great women who love Disney. You know, and I have some friends of guys who are just who visited Disney as kids and as adults, and they love Disney. I get that, but where their priority is today, I say make them go bankrupt. What do we do? Okay, you call your local TV station or your cable channel. And you say you want that channel turned off. You don't want it with your regular cable. Well, if we get 5 people doing it, that's one thing. But what happens if 100 people call? What happens if 1,000 people call? Oh, so it's not just you doing something. You have to be able to share and to get this information out there. And then it's not just you doing something. It's 5 more, and then those 5 more share, and then those 5 more share with 5 more. That's how we used to operate as Christians across the country. I still remember in the late 70s, it might have been early 80s, there was a boycott on 7-Eleven. 7-Elevens were selling porn. They almost went bankrupt because the church, the Christian church, and the Jewish community across the United States decided to boycott 7-Elevens based on the fact that they were selling porn. Okay, here's another fact on that. They were selling porn, and they were putting those pornography magazines down at the level of a toddler. Think about that. Now, if you go to a 7-Eleven today, and one of those 7-Elevens chains or franchises, happens to sell porn, why don't you check? If they're selling porn, where is the eye level of that porn? You know, the one of the last 7-Elevens I went to that sold that, it was toddler level. We need to return to being that united strength as a Christian, and how do we do that? Again, it's sharing information. It's not all of us taking a strange stand, I mean, one united stand. It's all of us doing what God would have us to do. It's sharing. That's a lot of the information I get. I read about 100 stories a day, and the information I share is so limited when I think about it. I spent today watching a video. It was a live cast video, which I will either work on exposing next week or the week after. I probably share some of it on Usama's show this week. We'll see. I've got to do a lot of editing. All I can say is this was bad. I will tell you who it's from. It's ISPU. I do not trust this organization. I consider it affiliated. It's a younger organization than your average Muslim Brotherhood type organization. I say type because their affiliations are extraneous. They're not as directly connected as your average Muslim Brotherhood organization, but they do have those connections. And the information, this is an organization that actually is out trying to educate teachers in school districts. They're trying to get your public school teachers to listen to them. And the information they're providing, even the one that they provided today, is somewhat deceitful. And I think because I proposed questions, they wouldn't answer any. So the questions I asked kind of revealed things about their study. And I'm hoping I can put that out next week. We'll see how patient I am. I don't have any projects set up this week, so maybe I'll have time to do that. I'm going to cut the show short. Anything you'd like to say, Darcy?
Yeah. Everybody watching, do your own reading. Don't just listen to us, That's how you learn. That's how you find things out. Do your own reading. Thanks.
God bless everybody. Fight on, because when you share, you're doing what God wants you to do. At the very least, you have to share.
God bless everybody.
God bless. Good night, everyone. All right.